this movie is extremely important. It's special. It's a game changer for the genre, just like I thought Logan was a game changer, just like I thought Deadpool was a game changer. I mean, these movies are really becoming so different, and they're transcending the genre, and that's exactly what I would hope for.
The Epic Film Guys Podcast.
Ha ha ha, a haul, a hee hee, and I thought my jokes were bad. Welcome to a brand new mini-sode review on the Epic Film Guys podcast. That's right, we're back just for a little bit to review Todd Phillips' Joker, which took the box office by storm last weekend in theaters. I know what you guys are thinking. Where's Nick? What's going on? Well, I wish I could give you all of the inside information, but for now, all I'm going to say is the show is not on a hiatus, but the regular show, as you guys listen to every week, we'll be back soon. Nick has taken some time off, and for now, you're stuck with me and the god of podcasting himself. Insert soundbite here. Loy Sauce. What's up, man?
How's it going, Justin? We had the extreme pleasure of watching this film in 70 millimeter film.
We did, even though the film was not shot on film, it was shot on digital. But we did see it on 70 millimeter, and it was absolutely beautiful to see. We just decided, you know, ladies and gentlemen, there's no way that we are going to be able to sit around and not review this movie, even though the show is kind of like on a really weird break or whatever you want to call it. Loy Sauce and I are still here. Nick is still alive. He's still editing podcasts. He still wants to jump back into podcasting. But for now, the regular show is just going to be on hiatus. So until further notice, just expect Saucy and I to jump on the mic and just, you know, blab our heads off about absolute fucking nonsense until you guys get numb. So that's what you're going to get out of us. But Saucy, this is a really big movie. Big financially. It was one of the most anticipated movies of the year for so many people. It's obviously the showcase of, if not the most iconic, you know, one of the most iconic comic book villains of all time. What am I talking about? He is the most iconic comic book villain of all time.
I was about to say, yeah.
And one of the most iconic cinematic villains of all time. And I would say in pop culture literature in general, I mean, the Joker is known as probably, I'd say, a top five villain. So, you know, this is a movie that a lot of people are talking about for many, many different reasons in the headlines a lot the past couple of weeks. And, you know, we saw it. We're going to sit down and talk about it. So I just wanted to ask you, though, before we go really deep and dig into this review of the movie. Initially, we saw these trailers. We sat down, we talked about them on the show, but let's take a step back and, you know, what were your initial expectations when you saw the trailer and you knew they were making a Joker movie? What were you hoping to see?
Well, I was hoping to see something a little bit more character-driven, a little bit grittier and smaller than a lot of the previous DC efforts. Actually, you know, you don't see movies like that in the current superhero movie landscape, with the Marvel movies being action-packed spectacles and the DC movies being flaming dumpster fires for the most part.
Watch it.
I was hoping for something, like I said, a little bit more character-driven and a little bit more grounded. And I was interested in seeing how they would adapt the character's origins, because this is not a character that necessarily needs an origin story. I think this movie, going in, I felt it was very unnecessary that we were getting an origin story for a character that I think works better if you don't know his backstory. But I was intrigued, you know, especially with Joaquin Phoenix, who I think is one of our finest working actors as the iconic character. Who's executive producing this movie but Martin Scorsese? So,
you know, the man that is catching so much heat in this past week in the press for saying that Marvel movies aren't cinema, that they're the equivalent of an amusement park ride, which, take it as you will. People are getting mad at him, but I'm like, you're really going to talk shit about Martin Scorsese? Have you looked at his filmography, people? Like, really? Like, just shut the fuck up. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Right.
Everyone has an opinion. Just saying.
That's an entirely different conversation. And you're right. Everyone has an opinion. I have an opinion. You have an opinion. We're going to talk about our opinions here. But Justin, what were your expectations going into this movie? We talked about the trailer. I think this has one of Joker has one of the best trailers to come along in a long, long while. What were your expectations going in? I guess we can talk about whether or not the movie lived up to the trailer, but please tell me.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, as you know, Saucy, because you see me all the time, to our listeners that have never seen me in person, I mean, I have two iterations of the Joker tattooed on my skin that I live with every single day of the year. So, I mean, like, it's one of my favorite villains, one of my favorite characters of all time. And just the idea of seeing an actor the caliber of Joaquin Phoenix in the role made me excited. When I saw Todd Phillips was directing, I was like, what? I don't know about this. But I've been burned in the past with thinking that comedy directors can't do drama and they end up being really great at doing so. And, you know, it goes both ways. You never know until you see the movie. So I was intrigued, but I also agree with you. I mean, for me, my Joker, I mean, I love all Jokers. Except for Jared Leto. Sorry, buddy. I know you're the minority in there, but no one really likes your Joker that much. You want no beef? You don't want no beef, Brian? Nicholson is what I grew up with, and I loved Ledger, and I think that each version of the Joker, even Cesar Romero's, brings something different to the table, something special and something exciting. And just the idea of seeing a Joker origin story kind of led me down the path where I felt the same way about Rob Zombie's Halloween remake, when that, you know, you're going to see what made the monster. And whenever you find out more about the monster's history, it makes him less compelling or less scary or whatever it may be. But when that first trailer landed, I was like, whoa, dude, this is something totally different. It looks like, you know, old school Scorsese. It looks like Taxi Driver, but with the Joker. And it looks brilliant. It just looked fantastic. So, I mean, my expectation was, much like what you said, I wanted to see a character-driven dramatic piece that was different than the action spectacles we see, you know, week in and week out every single month at the cinemas. And overall, I feel like what I thought was going to happen is what I saw on the big screen. But before we go into our actual initial thoughts on the film itself, Saucy, this is your job on the show. I have to open the damn thing. You can at least tell the listeners that don't know, you know, if you're one of those people that live out in the middle of nowhere and you don't have access to a theater that hasn't seen Joker yet, you might not know what the movie's about. So, Boy Sauce, tell them what Joker is all about.
Joker is about how Joaquin Phoenix becomes the Joker.
Okay.
Here's the thing. It's so the film takes place in, I'm guessing, early 1980s. Would you say that's accurate, Justin?
Well, the film jumps around based on what you see in it with, like, technology and stuff. I would say it's a fantasized version of a late 70s, early 80s.
Yes. Okay.
Because you see on a marquee a movie from the early 80s, but the style and look of everything is still 70s. You could go deep on that in its own discussion, but I would say early 80s, late 70s.
Gotham may be a little bit behind on the current styles of the day. But anyway, so we are following Arthur Fleck, of course, played by Joaquin Phoenix. He is kind of I guess you could call him a weirdo. Very socially awkward. He lives with his mother. He's a failed stand-up comedian. And basically, the world just starts shitting on him. And the movie's really about how much abuse one person can take before they snap and become a nihilistic murderer and criminal. So it's really a reconstruction. It causes you to recontextualize this iconic character.
Yeah, the way that I viewed it, honestly, to put it lightly and simply, is the descent from madness into mayhem and murder. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like how regular real life can affect you.
I'd say that's accurate. This movie kind of takes a page out of Scorsese's book, very much in the vein of, you know, the King of Comedy, Taxi Driver. Of course, it being executive produced by Martin Scorsese, you kind of have that kind of burned into its DNA already. But the director of this film is Todd Phillips, who...
Like I said, when I first saw that name, I'm like, dude, The Hangover.
Well,
that's all I could think of.
The thing is, like, I've always thought the Hangover movies were more nasty and nihilistic than they were funny. Like, I mean,
that's strange.
Well, I mean, the first Hangover, there's some good knockabout, you know, wacky antics in that movie. But like the Hangover 2 was extremely dark and nasty. And then the Hangover 3 was more of like an action picture that didn't really have much of a sense of humor at all. I just feel like Todd Phillips has a very dark worldview. At least that's the vibe that I got from the Hangover movies. And then, of course,
fair enough.
Yeah. You know, he's gone off and done movies like Due Date and War Dogs, I think was the other movie with Miles Teller in it. That wasn't very good. So, I was trepidatious going in because I'm like, he's known for his comedies, but. And now it makes sense to me because I always thought that he had that kind of like just nasty kind of worldview. It makes sense because this movie is extremely it embodies that worldview as well.
Dude, it's dark, it's cold, it's ugly, it's mean-spirited, it's unrelenting, and it does not hold back. Yeah. This movie does things that you've never seen ever take place within the comic book movie genre. So we're going to jump right in here. I got to throw it right back to you, though, because I know that we walked out of this theater. It was a really weird feeling for me, and this happens rarely. And if you listen to the show a lot, you'll hear me say this whenever a film affects me in a really deep way, when I don't know how to feel necessarily as soon as I walk out of the theater. This movie, Joker, was like that. You and I walked out of the theater. We were very silent. Just kind of looked around, didn't say anything. Just kind of like, okay, what did you think? And it was just kind of like a really weird silent situation. So I got to ask you first, what were your initial thoughts on Joker?
Well, I think the first thing I said to you was I could have used two or three less scenes of Joaquin Phoenix dancing in slow motion. So that was like the first thought I had. No, I admire Joker. I admire the fact that I think it's interesting as a character study, and I think it's a good vehicle for Joaquin Phoenix. He really kind of elevates this script, which I think is pretty. I mean, the trajectory of the script is pretty straightforward and simple. Like, everything that you kind of imagine would happen to this character does happen. And we can get into this later on when we get into spoilers, but some really kind of pedestrian and bordering on cringy dialogue. But I think Joaquin Phoenix, the strength of his performance kind of carries the rest of it. Again, I really appreciate what the movie is trying to do, but I have to pass it over to you for your initial thoughts so we can get into this a little bit deeper, because I have things I need to say about this movie.
Oh, yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't seen this movie, if you are the minority out there that lives in the boonies, you don't have access to a theater, or if you're just deciding, hey, I'm going to wait till home video, after our initial thoughts, we're jumping right into spoilers, because there's no other way to talk about this movie than just to get into the deep nitty-gritty. So beware of the clown. My initial thoughts, as I was just saying, when you were walking out of the theater, I didn't know how to feel. This movie really nailed me. It hit me really hard, like a fucking brick to the face. You know, just like how Arthur basically endures all of this pain, this agony, this sadness, this depression. You know, this world just shits all over him. I felt that. I was connected to his character throughout the entire run of the movie. I was like, whoa, that was heavy. Much like Marty McFly would repeat in Back to the Future. That's just how it felt to me. And for a movie about the Joker, I didn't necessarily know if that was the right feeling I should have walking out of the gate. But the more I thought about it, the more I let it sink into me and let it be a part of me, I couldn't stop thinking about this movie. And this is one of a few movies this year that has had this effect. And I think the movie's absolutely brilliant. Just being completely honest about it, I think the movie hit the nail on the head. I think it touches on, and we're going to get into really deep here, it touches on mental health in a way that no other movie that I've ever seen has ever dealt with. And I think that it used the Joker as the vehicle to portray that madness of what can life be like if you're that person that's born into shit. You're born into a situation that you have no control over, and then life and the world around you just continuously beats you to a pulp until you finally break. Until as a human, you can only take so much before you make a decision. And then basically in this case, you go fucking crazy. I mean, I feel like Phoenix is just absolutely spellbinding. He's mesmerizing. He's brilliant. It's a career best performance. We've seen him great in everything. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen him in a movie where I was like, Phoenix sucks in this. Was this movie written and created to be a vehicle just for a Phoenix performance? I don't know. But I think that he's the perfect person to take on this role for this particular version of the character. And I thought literally, this movie wouldn't be anything without him. I mean, you look at all the other actors that have played the character, and I can't see any of them in this particular version of the character, and I can't see anybody else in the world, any other actor taking on this role. I actually commented to you as we were walking out, and you didn't have an answer for this. I said Phoenix, in my opinion, is probably the best actor working in Hollywood today. I said, the equivalent of like Brando in his prime, or Nicholson in his prime, or Pacino in his prime, or De Niro in his prime. And I said, you name one other actor that's working in Hollywood today that can equally match what Phoenix did in that movie. And you were silent. You didn't have an immediate answer.
I have my answer, and it's John Cena.
Wow, Brian. Come on. I know this is a review about the Joker, but that was not a good joke. It was not a good joke. Much like the jokes that Arthur has in the movie that all fail to make the audience laugh. So, ladies and gentlemen, to our audience, we're going to get down and dirty here. We're going to dig into this movie right now. So, spoilers galore. Brian, take it. Take it by the horns, baby.
Well, I think I should be nice to the movie and talk about the things that I liked.
sure, well, we could talk about things we liked first, yeah.
Because there's a lot about this film that I really appreciate. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I don't think we need to really talk any more about Phoenix's performance. He's just incredible. It's a physical transformation that he took as well, because he's, like, practically skeletal in this movie. He's, like, complete, like... I mean, you can see his ribs and bones sticking out. Like, he must have starved himself for the...
Well, I actually read, Brian, what he did. He did starve himself. He ate a very light diet. And one of the most interesting things that I heard that he did was he refused to watch television. He would not watch television, so he would avoid watching commercials for food. So he wouldn't get hungry and want to eat. So that's one of the things that he did in order to prevent himself. Because, dude, when you look at him doing press for the movie, I mean, he's his normal weight. He's decent shaped guy, but he's not like thin in the face. He sunk himself into like, so his face looks long and thin like the Joker from the comics. He has the perfect build in the face for it. So
he's definitely perfect for the role. And obviously, he was kind of given, again, I have not read the script, so I don't know exactly how much is necessarily improvisation or what, but he does this really interesting thing with the character, and it makes sense for the character, for him to have this disorder where he basically suffers from pathological laughter, where he just starts laughing and can't stop, like, and he laughs necessarily for no reason. So I think that was really an interesting avenue for the character, because you see him in the film studying other stand-up comics and, you know, taking notes and everything for his own, you know, performance and his own reference. And he hears other people laughing, and then he decides to join in. And I don't think he necessarily knows that it's funny. He just knows to laugh because other people are laughing, and then he'll laugh at like other inappropriate times during the set. So I don't know. I thought that was unnerving because unsettling to have someone just laugh for seemingly no reason.
I think it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I think that his laugh, and it's going to be hard not to compare his character to previous versions of the Joker. But let's make it clear right here. Let's just make this clear. He's not the Joker until the end of the movie. Yeah. So
he's Arthur Fleck. Yeah.
His descent into the Joker, it finally happens, and we'll get to the end and all that stuff. But this is the build up to that. But it's still the Joker's laugh. It's still his laugh throughout. I found it interesting. I found it annoying and obnoxious, but that's what the film is trying to show you. That's what it's trying to do to affect you when you hear that laugh. It's like what would happen to you if you were in public and that type of person was there and affecting you. Like you're on the bus and you just, and he's just like, and literally like the laugh is something totally different. You've never heard this kind of laugh out of the Joker before. It's scary. It's weird. And the fact that he almost chokes himself.
Yeah.
You know, he can't breathe when he does it, makes it even more uncomfortable. So it's like, whoa, dude, like that's been a part of the character from the beginning. And I liked that choice. Because the way that he would laugh in the other films, it was random, you know what I mean? Or it was like uncontrollable just because I'm going to kill someone, I'm going to laugh, like a crazy asshole, which is what the Joker always does. But it was an interesting take. I think it worked for this version of the character.
Yeah, and I think that the movie deals with mental illness also in a way where I feel like you're seeing how, you know, childhood trauma and neglect and abuse kind of leads to problems later on. They manifest themselves in, you know, later in life.
I mean, I thought it was done perfectly, honestly. I mean, like, when you look at the kind of people in our world today that are affected the same way that Arthur is, it's the most realistic way that I've ever seen mental health portrayed in a movie with someone that's going through something. I mean, the character starts off, he has a job. It's a low-level job, but he enjoys it. He loses it. You know, he finds out information about his family that really upsets him. He starts going down this deep, dark path where he's so sick of being beaten down on his whole entire life. And then obviously he has flashbacks to things that happened to him that he forgot about. The one thing that I wanted to bring up on this movie, and I'm not saying that it's irresponsible anyway, because I feel like this movie needed to be made, and I'm glad that it was made. And it's a movie that people should see, because no other movie handles mental health the way this movie does. It's so real. It's something to not be ignored, because this is kind of like what happens to a lot of people in our country that decide to make bad decisions and decide to go off and they're having a bad day. And you know what? I'm just so sick of this. I'm just going to go into this nightclub and I'm just going to take it out on innocent people. I'm just going to go here. And like, that literally is, you know, the epitome of what the Joker is. I mean, he's constant chaos. He's madness. He's the embodiment of hatred and evil within his own head. He's stuck in his own head, and it's hard for him to get out of there.
He doesn't have help. That's the thing too.
He does opening up. He does in the opening of the movie, but that's taken away from him, which is a very real situation. That's a problem in our country right now, Brian, with the mental health dilemma, which is a huge problem in our country right now, was that there's no funding for it. It's that there's little to no funding for it. And the funding that is there gets taken away. And a lot of people are just told to take tons of medication, which Arthur does. He's addicted to the medication, but little does he know it's not helping him at all. When he stops taking the medication, it actually doesn't really have that big of a difference on the character. But I mean, this is exactly what happens in our world. And this is what helps create these people that go on to make these bad decisions, all these mass shootings. I mean, like, let's make this clear right here. The movie is fiction, but it's based on real people that live in our country. And I feel like people that are looking past that are just, you know, being blind to the fact. Like, some people could watch this movie, Brian, and I'm sure we could get into this deeper if you want to. But this is the first time. I mean, Death Wish, for example, vigilante movie, is one of my favorite movies of all time. When that movie came out, Michael Winner's Death Wish, people in New York City were so sick of crime, they watched that movie and they took justice into their own hands. There was a guy on the subway who actually shot muggers, or attempted muggers, or he said they were muggers, because he thought they were going to rob him. And he killed one of them based on the fact that he watched Death Wish. I feel like this movie could be the calling card for people that are in similar situations as Arthur, and they could go, hey, I can be just like that. I could do the same thing this character does.
Yes, and that's where we run into my issues. Well, not my issues with the movie, but my experience with grappling with the movie. Because the thing is, I was worried while watching this movie. I was nervous, like, because I was thinking that someone, not necessarily in our theater, but someone somewhere might watch this movie and be like, yeah, this movie understands me. Like, I could just imagine someone getting the wrong idea from this movie. Like, you and I know right from wrong. Like, we know that the character on screen is not someone to be admired. This is behavior that should not be replicated.
But here's the thing, though, not to cut you off, but this movie is about one of the most beloved villains of all time. So people are already going in and they're already admiring the Joker. I have the Joker, versions of the Joker tattooed on me. People are going to see this Joker movie with Joker t-shirts. People are getting the action figure of this version of the Joker already. People want to love this Joker because it's so faithfully presented. So, I mean, they are admiring him.
Well, I mean, not necessarily admiring the character, just admiring, I guess, what he's doing. Because the Joker in this movie, He's a murderer. I guess the character's always been a murderer, but
he always has been, 100%.
But in this movie, it's done in such visceral, gut-wrenching, R-rated, brutal fashion.
Dude, it's mean fucking spirited. It's mean fucking spirited. It's as mean spirited as it comes.
You see Joker pull out a gun on a subway and just shoot three people, and it's just done in such a stark, cold manner. And you just wonder if someone, and again, like the movie, this is kind of jumping ahead here, but the movie ends with the Joker literally standing, arms outstretched, and people lifting him up and yelling and clapping and cheering for him.
I hate to say it, but
that's
almost
the
like
kind of that's the kind of attention that people who aspire to be like the Joker want, you know. And this character has baggage, like we know with, you know, the Dark Knight Rises tragedy. It's arguable about whether or not the shooter was inspired by the Joker necessarily, but he called himself the Joker. And
he
so
called himself the Joker, but when they looked at his apartment and, you know, they went through and found all of his stuff, there was no Joker paraphernalia. There was nothing to do with the Joker in his place. So I think that may have just been, you know, the media blew that up a little bit, just like the media blew up this movie, Brian. Our opening night showing on 70mm at AFI in Silver Spring, you'd expect that theater to be sold out, wouldn't you? We were like, you could hear a needle drop in that place because it was like nobody in there. And I was shocked. I mean, there was no security guard. There was a sign that said no makeup or masks for this showing. And, you know, I feel like the media pushed and pushed and pushed on the controversy to make it even more of a big deal. And people were complaining. But honestly, it's free press and no press is bad press. And it made the movie even bigger.
I would agree with that. I was worried about, like, is that going to affect the box office? Because it was odd.
Not at all.
It was odd being in that Thursday night screening and having there be practically no one there. I don't know. I don't know if the media was... I might agree that the media kind of got carried away. But were they just reporting on the security measures that were being taken?
I guess they were, but I mean, I feel like some of the headlines were just over exaggerated. And I mean, we do know that a lot of theaters had security, had extra police or whatever they may have. I mean, some theaters in some parts of the country already have cops anyways, because they're in bad parts of the town or whatever in that area. But the worst that's happened so far is some kid called in a bomb threat or something, or made a threat and they closed the theater down and they sent everybody out. But that's the worst that's happened. So,
well, thank God that that's the only thing that
I know
that's
but
happened.
Here's the thing.
I feel like that people, because I've read comments from people online saying like, oh, the media hopes that there's a mass shooting, so they have something sensational that people
well,
can click on and they get more clicks. And I'm like, that's a horribly cynical way of looking
at it. It's a horribly cynical way, but it's almost, they may be right, Brian. I mean, that's just the way that our media works in the United States. Think of it this way, though. We're going to jump forward a little bit. We're going to jump around, ladies and gentlemen. You mentioned that scene at the end. So anyone that's seen this knows what we're talking about. Joker is in a car wreck. He's on his way. He got arrested. He's on his way to jail. This giant mob, this riot happens, this giant mob of people wearing clown masks pull him out of the car, lift him up almost like in a Christ-like manner, like he's their savior. And then he gets up on top of this car and he's standing with his arms out. And he is being glorified. Make no mistake, he is being glorified. But is Todd Phillips trying to say you as the audience should glorify him? Or is he saying to you as the audience member, this is what we do with people like this? And for me, I thought that it was the latter, where he's saying, it, you know, it's a social commentary. This is what we do. I mean, I'm not lying, dude. I love true crime. I've watched every single documentary on Ted Bundy. There is Jeffrey Dahmer, you name it. Like, we like true crime. It's a thing in our country. It's huge. We are obsessed with and admire, in a weird way, serial killers. You know, it's just part of who we are as a society. I mean, dude, OJ. There it is. I'll just mic drop right here. But I feel like that's what they were trying to say with it. Like, just saying to the audience, this is what we do. I don't think they were trying to say, look at this horrible thing this person's done. Now idolize him.
I don't think that's what the movie was trying to do either. But I feel like someone might get that impression from watching the movie. Some disturbed individual or you know, that's all I'm saying, is that I feel like you and I, we know right from wrong and we know how to discern from what we're watching and what we take from it. But I'm just imagining like someone in the theater being like, yeah, this movie gets me. And that's what I am nervous about. But at the end of the day, it's a motion picture. It's a film about a villain. I don't think the movie was trying to sway one way or the other. I think it was just presenting this character study and letting us take from it what we wanted to.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
And I admire that. I admire the fact that this movie exists. It's pretty ballsy of Warner Brothers to release a film that is so different from their model up until now.
I would say so different from anything else we've ever seen within the comic book movie genre. Yeah, 100%.
Certainly, certainly. I'm not so sure about the writing, especially in the third act.
You mean once he becomes the Joker, finally?
Yes, once he actually finally becomes the Joker. Well, first of all, the first time you see him in Joker, full Joker getup, the makeup, the suit and everything, it's the scene where he's on the steps, and this is a scene
I knew you were going to get to this.
This is a scene that is, you know, shown in the trailer and everything. And for whatever reason, the baffling decision was made to have Gary Glitter's, what is it, Rock and Roll Part 2, or otherwise known as the Hey Song, the song that people sing at sporting events and high school football games and things like that. That's the song he's dancing to when he's on the steps. And it's so baffling because, first of all, that's not a song that you would ever imagine being associated with the Joker. Like, why that song out of any song you could have played? But then, like, they play like a minute of the song and then they awkwardly fade into score music. And I'm just like, why didn't you just play score music the whole time? Why?
You know what I would have loved in that scene, Brian? I hate to cut you off. You know what I would have loved? Silence.
Sure.
Just let it play out, because it's all slow-mo of him dancing down the steps.
And there's not music diegetically in the scene, so he's just dancing to nothing. So that would exactly. be very chilling if there were no music at all.
That's what I love about this. I actually did some reading prior to us sitting down to review this, and I guess all of the stuff with Phoenix dancing was all improvised. None of it was written in the script. So every scene where you see him like in a room alone and he just starts doing the weird dancing
stuff. Which there are many, many scenes of Phoenix.
There are, but it's creepy as shit and I like it. So I like what he was doing there, obviously, and he was showcasing, hey, look how much weight I lost for this role. Look at me with my shirt off and I look bony and like I'm about to die tomorrow. You know, but I agree with you. The song, I don't like that song anyway. I think that song fucking sucks. Fuck that song.
It was also, yes, it was also recorded by a pedophile.
I know, and people are bitching and whining, oh, this pedophile is going to benefit from this movie. I don't think Todd Phillips was thinking of that when he decided to pick that song. Maybe he doesn't like that song since he was a kid. I don't know, but bad choice, bro. I thought the score itself for the film is, you loved it before I did, and it grew on me. I'm going to say the dude's name completely wrong. Hildur Guðnadóttir. Close enough.
Yeah,
right?
That's fine.
I think it's menacing. I think it's dark. I think it's cold. It fits the film perfectly. I think it's definitely one of the stars of the movie because it definitely is the backing of the visuals, which we need to get to. I mean, dude, for this movie being placed in the late 70s, early 80s, it looks amazing. And I had commented to you prior to this discussion, ladies and gentlemen, Joker was made on a $55 million budget. For those of you that saw Rambo Last Blood, that's the exact same budget that movie had. Look at that movie, then look at this movie. Look at the cinematography, look at the locations that they shot. Look at who's in it, look who's involved. I mean, it's night and day. This movie looks stunning. The cinematography in this thing, to be honest with you, Brian, I would not be surprised if it gets nominated for Best Cinematography. I just loved the look and the feel of the movie. They nailed the tone of the movie. All the performances were good. I really don't think anyone was bad in the movie. And we obviously have to talk about Robert De Niro. He's in a small role here as a TV host, but he's a very important part of the movie.
Yeah, I think casting De Niro was a kind of meta decision by Phillips because obviously Robert De Niro's role had inspired this version of the character. And De Niro's good in the film. His role is also something, also leads to something that I had a problem with, the contrivance of the third act. Because De Niro's character, he's this late night talk show host, Murray Franklin. Arthur has this dream of appearing on this show and being a guest on the show. There's a fantasy sequence early on where he imagines himself in the audience and he gets called up to the front and, you know, he has a chat with Murray Franklin and they set this up at the beginning of the film. And then there's a scene later on where Arthur completely bombs at his stand-up set at some, you know, comedy club or dive bar or wherever he's performing, and someone catches it on videotape, and it somehow ends up on the show. They're doing this segment where they like make fun of people. I don't know. Like, I don't understand what the setup is exactly, but somehow Arthur's stand-up set appears on the show, and he's humiliated, of course. That gets a whole lot of attention, people calling into the show wanting Arthur to appear as a guest, so Murray reaches out to Arthur to appear on the show. All of that is extremely contrived, and I don't really buy it for a minute. I was wondering if all of that was a delusion inside Arthur's head, because the movie sets up that, you know, from the start, that Arthur's kind of an unreliable character to be following, because he does have these hallucinations, these delusions and daydreams and things like that. So I was thinking that was so contrived that there's no way that that would happen. But then, of course, it's I guess it is a real thing that happens. So
it does happen. And it's one of the most shocking moments of the movie. A lot of people are saying that it was telegraphed and they expected it. But for me, when that moment happened, and I'm not going to go that deep into spoilers, you know what I'm talking about, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, it's one of the most sadistic parts of the entire movie, and you're like, whoa, it knocked the wind out of me, I'll tell you that.
Yes. I feel like, I know it's a movie, but that...
Let me guess, you're going to say that's one of the most irresponsible parts of the film, aren't
no,
you?
No. I just think any real late night talk show would have cut off the conversation way before it got to that point.
But ratings, bro. But ratings, and
that's true.
That's a commentary on, again, our country right now. It really is. There's a lot to say in that movie that's about our society right now.
Joker even says in the dialogue, like, society rejected me. And there's like a meme from years ago about like Joker saying we live in a society. And so, I mean, I don't know if the movie is being self-aware or if it's actually just that behind.
No, I mean, no, it's not that. I just think that, I mean, Phillips and Company, and Phoenix especially, made the creative decision to make this their version of the character. They said, we're not going to follow any specific plot line or storyline or anything you've seen from Joker comics before. We're just going to do our own thing with the character, which, if you remember, Brian, a lot of fans were pissed about. There was a lot of fans bitching and moaning, as they always do when they're not getting their fucking way. You know, so that was a big thing, and I think it worked here. But I think they were trying to implement, you know, themes and ideas about the character that gelled with their version. And I think that was just a line of dialogue you can imagine him saying in the comics. Now, I was going to ask you this, because again, this is not the version of the character we see that's kind of a bad guy, failed comedian, falls into a vat of acid and comes out pale white, stained, and he's maniacal, crazy, and wants to kill Batman. This is totally different than that. So did that bother you at all, that they took this artistic direction down a different path and we didn't see him kind of like as the classic Joker you expected?
No, I mean, again, I appreciate the fact that the movie was restrained enough to not, I mean, there's no like comic book action sequences. There's no, I mean, really he's only Joker the last like 15, 20 minutes of the film.
Dare I say this doesn't even really feel like a comic book movie outside of the fact that he is the Joker.
Right. I mean, there's like ridiculous fan theories and articles and that I keep reading about, like, oh, some fans theorize that it's not the real Joker. It's he's the inspiration for the real Joker that we know from the comics. And I'm like, the movie's called Joker. You know,
he calls himself Joker. He wants to be called Joker.
Joaquin Phoenix and Todd Phillips have not confirmed any of these ridiculous theories. The character's meant to be the Joker, so I don't buy into any of that. I think people are just reading way too much into something that's not there.
I gotta say this is a subject we have to bring up, and then I was going to get to what I was going to say about this, because I was going to say, man, what would I do, what would I give to see this version of the Joker up against a mean, brutal, vicious Batman? A lot. Because it would be a real sight to see. But my question to you, because we have to talk about this, I know to me it felt like it was unnecessary. Did the Waynes need to be in this movie? Was it necessary? Because this movie's really
the whole movie wasn't necessary.
Well, again, I know, I understand that, but the movie's taking liberties so strong with their version of the character. why did they feel like, okay, well, we have to do this thing, maybe as a Warner Brothers thing? It could be, where they're like, oh, you have to have the Waynes in it. I mean, there's a scene, I mean, the whole idea is that he thinks that he's Thomas Wayne's son, you know? And that, to me, just felt a little bit shoehorned in, like, that was totally unnecessary for me. I'm like, give me the Joker. It's fine. If you're going to give me the Joker without Batman, give me the Joker without Batman. I don't need Joker going to Wayne Manor and having a scene with him with Bruce Wayne. So what's the point of that? So we can go, oh, hey, that's the reason why when Batman turns 20 and he puts on a cowl and a cape, he wants to beat the shit out of that guy. Well, I hated that connection.
I'm going to argue against that, Justin. I didn't hate it, because if the movie didn't have that, there would be practically nothing to be surprised by from the movie at all. Because I actually thought that was an interesting detour that the movie takes, because it kind of gets your mind working about, okay, is his mother crazy, or did she actually have an affair with Thomas Wayne? Is it possible that they could be taking such liberties with the character that they would make you know, Batman and the Joker related.
Brothers, yeah.
So I was curious by that, because it introduced an element of mystery to the film. Because as I kind of hinted at early on, if you watch the trailer for this movie, you've practically seen the movie. You know, the film itself does not have very many surprises in it. Everything happens exactly as you would expect it to this character. So to have a little element of mystery or uncertainty to the character, I thought was welcome. But
the problem is, Brian, I feel like they're shoehorned in just for the simple fact to be like, okay, here, we're going to give you, for like the 1 billionth time on film or television or comics, the Wayne's death scene. I mean, how many? I mean,
even the movie needed that, though. It did need that.
Dude, it did not need it. It didn't, to me, need it. But okay, I guess it's in another way the Joker causing the death of the Waynes. And I didn't like how it was done, personally. I'm just being completely honest there. I didn't think it was done as successfully, even as Zack Snyder did it briefly in the beginning of Dawn of Justice. I mean, I just feel like it was rushed, it was poorly handled, and I was like, this didn't need to be in the movie. It was just taking away from the character that I was interested in. I'm like, if you're going to give me elements of Wayne and Batman, then you're getting my mind on that character. And then it's going to be like, oh, yeah, what's going to happen next? And we know that they've come out and said, this is a one-off. We're not going to see this version of the Joker with Batman as much as we'd like to see that. So why even show it in the first place? Why even tease it if it's never going to happen?
I don't know if it was necessarily intended to be a tease.
Whether it's intended to be or not, it is to fans.
Well, sure. I think it was to close that loop, because if they introduce the Waynes at all, you know, you need to show what happens to them at the end, necessarily, even though we all know this is a one-off version of the character and this is a singular story that they're trying to tell. So you know, I think they wanted to close off that thread, that plot thread introduced with the Waynes, because the whole movie kind of, it's recontextualizing the character. So it kind of, if you're recontextualizing the origin of the villain, you also need to do the same for the ultimate, you know, the character that's going to become the hero. So it worked for me. Again, it didn't necessarily need to be in the movie. But then again, I argue this movie didn't need to be made at all. We don't need an origin story for the Joker to begin with. So
I was going to ask you, as we're going to wrap things up here on this review, were there any standout moments or scenes that really just took you away, that you were like, this is amazing, like really, really, really blew you away?
Well, initially, I was very kind of put off by the Zazie Beetz character. This is a character named Sophie. She lives in Arthur's apartment building, and they meet and kind of hit it off. And it appears that they have this connection that to me seemed very far-fetched and very rushed. And she seemed very taken with him immediately.
For no reason.
Yeah.
Right?
And he's this like greasy, weird guy. So that didn't work for me initially. And then I started to wonder if she was even real at all, or if he was kind of embellishing their relationship in his mind. And it turns out that's exactly what happened. I thought that kind of showed how, you know, further how pathetic this character is. He's so desperate for human connection that he invents it in his mind. And it lent itself additionally to the unreliable narrator aspect of it, which I found to be quite chilling. And it makes you uncomfortable as a viewer if you don't know exactly if what you're watching is real or a delusion. I think the scene, once it becomes clear to the audience, was very strong, except the fact that they show flashbacks to scenes between the two of them, and she's not there. He's just by himself. I'm like, that was unnecessary. We didn't necessarily need that. Because that scene when he's in her apartment.
Oh my God, dude. Absolutely horrifying.
I didn't know what was going to happen at that point. Because she walks in and she sees him and she's like, What are you doing here? Who are you? I'd like for you to leave. My girl is sleeping in the other room. You know, my little girl. So I was thinking that would be a perfect way to let the audience know, oh no, like she doesn't actually know him. And it didn't need to flash back. I thought that was very tacked on. It's like,
of course,
for the dumb audience members.
Yeah, we know that's going to be something they're going to do. For me, I think that one of the standout moments for me that really knocked my socks off, really, really took me a surprise, was when after Arthur had been fired from his job as a clown, his coworker Randall and another coworker come to bring him a bottle of liquor to check on him to see what's going on. Now, keep in mind, Randall's the character that gave him a gun in the first place, which kind of caused his descent into madness even further when he ends up using it. But when he comes over, this is the beginning of the Joker. This is when we start seeing Arthur change into the Joker that we know. He's already got the white on his face. And I think that symbolically, that was the moment we knew, okay, he's the Joker now. And we see one of the most vicious, violent killings in the entire movie. And at that moment took me right out of the movie and shocked me. And I was like, wow, I can't believe you just went there. The audacity of it, the brilliance of it. That was one of my favorite scenes there. And that's literally my segue, Brian, into the future of DC Cinematic Universe, the DC movies that are coming. Will this change what we've seen and what's going to be coming?
I'm interested because this movie is a one-off, supposedly, you know.
Even though it's making so much money, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Warner's isn't just like, here, take as much as you want, make another one, please.
Yeah. Or try to put Joaquin Phoenix's portrayal in their DC universe or whatever. I'm wondering if they'll just continue to do these one-off stories and not necessarily try to connect it into an ongoing story or universe like the Marvel movies. Like, I feel like this is a step in a direction that could be exciting for DC. So the fact that this is relatively smaller budget, I mean, $55 million for a movie like this is pretty extraordinary.
And dude, it's already made worldwide as of today's date, $281 million on that budget. So, I mean,
it's lucrative. I mean, if they, again, this doesn't have any action to speak of necessarily, you know, there's no extensive digital effects or CGI or anything in the movie either. So I guess it doesn't require a budget like that, but DC has to take notice and see that you don't need that necessarily to make a movie that people will want to go see. Birds of Prey, I think, is rated R. I think they've confirmed an R rating for that one. So we'll see how violent that gets, but I still think that would be, you know, that still looks bright and colorful and fun.
That's still summer blockbuster fare. Yeah, that'll be comic book violence. It'll be traditional in the sense of what you think of as a Suicide Squad movie. Let's just hope it's a lot better than Suicide Squad. My viewpoint on the subject is that this is a great step in the right direction. DC is finally mirroring Marvel in the way they've been trying to all along with Dawn of Justice, in which they slightly failed. I mean, in this case, they went darker than Dawn of Justice, which got criticized solely based on its darkness and nihilism, and did it more successfully, and more people are loving it. I think it's because it's about the Joker. But I'm just saying, I think that the reality is that they decided to make a contained movie, a character piece with a brilliant performer in it. Probably my favorite performance of the year so far from a male actor that I've seen. I can't think of anybody else that's topped it yet. And they treated it seriously. And they finally, I think for the most part, Brian, they gave Phillips and Phoenix carte blanche and said, go make it, which to me is the greatest step in the right direction, because Warner Brothers has been known to not allow that, to basically micromanage all of these movies, which has helped ruin all of them in some way, shape, or form. I mean, minus Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy, all of them since, they have had their hand in. And I think this is the perfect direction for them. Not saying they all have to be R-rated or violent or anything like that, but just give the directors creative freedom. Let them create their vision and put it up on the big screen and let us decide if we like it or not. And instead of having to have it connect to this movie that's going to connect to that movie in 10 years, you can't follow the Marvel formula. You already tried doing that. You were late to the game. You rushed it and it failed. This is the right thing to do.
I agree. I mean, I'm not going to call Todd Phillips an auteur or anything like that, but it's very clear that Warner Brothers is letting him direct the movie that he wants to make in his vision.
I mean, and, Brian, would you call would you call half the directors that have directed Marvel movies auteurs? I wouldn't.
No,
maybe call a few of them, maybe, but not all of them. No.
Well, but Marvel isn't in the business of like the auteur theory doesn't mean anything to Marvel. So
of course it doesn't.
So
I just want the money.
So I'm. Again, I'm just kind of amazed that this movie exists in the way that it does in the first place. Because, again, there's no action. There's no exciting, you know, chase sequences. Or
Brian.
The city isn't in danger of, like...
There's no Batman, dude.
A blue
there's
laser
no dude in a cape and cowl.
There's no Batman. Yeah. I say go Warner Brothers. Like, I'd rather have a movie like this than a movie like Justice League or Suicide Squad. Or a movie like that. So
that's it, man. I think that says it all for this movie. I think everyone that's listened to this has already seen it. I think you should all see it. I think this movie is extremely important. It's special. It's a game changer for the genre. Just like I thought Logan was a game changer. Just like I thought Deadpool was a game changer. I mean, these movies are really becoming so different and they're transcending the genre. And that's exactly what I would hope for. It was a breath of fresh air for me, Brian. I love twisted, violent, mean-spirited, cold movies. And I like fun, fluffy popcorn movies. And this really just took the character as I've always known him and loved him, did its own thing with it and treated him with justice and did him wonderfully. And I mean, I just can't thank that team enough for creating that version of the character and giving us this movie. I think it's brilliant. I'm going to go ahead and give my rating, Brian. I'm going to give Joker a 9 out of 10. For me, I mean, after 3 days of thinking about it, it sat with me. And I mean, no other movie has affected me that much in a long time, especially not a comic book movie, from performance to visual flair, to score to direction. I mean, it had it all for me overall. And I think that everyone should see it. So for me, 9 out of 10 for Joker.
Do you think we'll get a dark and gritty origin story for the Clock King next?
No, but I did see that Jason Alexander offered up him as an actor. He said, I'd love to do Egghead. He legit said it in an interview yesterday. So,
oh, that's embarrassing.
Bring on that Egghead movie. You know what? Me and Nick want this. You know what we want? Just give us our King Tut origin story and just make sure whoever you cast, his beard needs to be made of shredded motherfucking wheat. That's how it be EFG style. You know what, Nick would, I don't even know what he thinks about the movie. I'd love to hear. I know he saw the movie.
He hated it.
I miss him in this review, honestly.
I saw him bitching about it on Twitter.
It's okay. He's never seen Taxi Driver, or he's never seen King of Comedy, or I don't think he's even seen a single Scorsese movie. So this definitely took note from those, and I'm not saying that's any excuse to make it better, but I'm just saying it's influenced heavily.
It follows King of Comedy pretty closely. I mean, people might say that it's like almost like a theft of Scorsese's work. I don't know if I'd go that far.
He almost directed it himself. He was going to direct it himself, so...
I'm going to give Joker a 7 out of 10. I didn't like it nearly as much as you did. I have problems with the dialogue, especially as the film wraps up. The Joker at one point says, I'm a mentally ill loner. And I'm like, a mentally ill loner would not say, I'm a mentally ill loner. Like, it just
But it's the Joker, Brian. The Joker will say whatever comes to the Joker's mind at that moment. Dude, he's unexplainable when he gets to that point. That's what I love about him.
That doesn't really hold water with me. I thought the dialogue was very disingenuous and on the nose, on the red clown nose. And
ha ha ha. I wish I could do his laugh, because man, that would just creep everybody out.
Very chilling laugh. I mean, the performance is there. I mean, really, I think Joaquin Phoenix elevated it. I can't imagine any other actor giving the role that much gravitas and just magnetism. I couldn't take my eyes off the screen, because you're with Phoenix practically. He's in every frame of the movie, almost. To have an actor of such immense power in that role.
So, Brian, Oscar nomination?
A credit to the movie. I think an Oscar nomination for Phoenix. I don't imagine this would get like any Best Picture nominations.
I know.
Although, although it won the Golden Lion, so what do I know? But
I hate to hate on people that love this movie. Some people are so unrealistic. You know how many times I've seen the comment, just give him the Oscar now? In the past 2 weeks, I'm like, dude, you can't think that way.
I'm sure
I love their enthusiasm, but I'm just saying,
oh yeah,
be realistic.
I'm glad
about
people
it.
Are loving this movie. I necessarily worry about the people who watch the film and get the wrong idea from it. You can call me soft or an SJW or whatever for saying that.
No, but you're not, because you love movies just as mean, if not worse than this. I mean, this movie is done so realistically. It's not like an 80s vigilante movie that we'll throw on at 11 o'clock at night and have a few beers and laugh at. This movie's done stone-faced and seriously. It's no Brian laughing matter. So that's,
yeah, you know, the character has baggage, and this is a character who thrives on chaos and murder, and something that we don't need any more of in our society right now. But it is a movie, and for what it is, the movie is well directed. Again, aesthetically, the score is great. So I admired a lot about the movie, but it's not a movie I feel like I would watch again necessarily, except for revisiting that amazing performance. So 7 out of 10 for me for Joker.
That's it. And that said so perfectly and wonderfully, Loy Sauce, thank you so much for joining me for this mini-sode review for Todd Phillips' Joker movie, starring the brilliant performance by Joaquin Phoenix. Of course, we want to know what you thought of the movie, so make sure to comment on this post on our social media. And of course, Loy Sauce, we're all over the place. We're like whores on the corner. Back when there was whores on the corner. I don't think that's a thing anymore. I think it's just Craigslist. I think they just stay at their house until they get a call. Right? I think that's a thing. Where can
I
all of our listeners...
I wouldn't know.
I'm sure you wouldn't. Tell our listeners where they could find us on social media.
You can find us at Epic Film Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And you can listen to us wherever good podcasts are available. Spotify, Podbean, iTunes... And be sure to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out.
Yeah, thank you very much. That's exactly what I wanted to hear, Saucy. So until next time, until we get back to our normal schedule and we're pumping out normal episodes, you might hear from Saucy and I reviewing some schlocky horror movie. It is the month of October, and we apologize for not checking in more with horror-related content. Keep in mind, if you are a follower of the social media, or especially our Facebook page, we are doing the Epic Film Guys 31-Day Horror Challenge. All you have to do to complete the challenge is watch 10 horror movies that you've never seen. And if you're feeling bloodthirsty, you want to really dip those teeth into somebody's neck and suck out the blood, hey, you can do one movie every single day of the month, and you'll be a pro in our eyes. So make sure to check in those movies on our Facebook page. And Saucy and I might have a horror movie to talk about in a few weeks. So just prepare yourself for it. But until next time, I'm Justin.
And I'm Brian.
And we'll see you
at the movies.
Welcome, film fans, to an extremely special mini-sode review of the Epic Film Guys podcast.
Wait, we're reviewing the podcast?
Fucking A. I need to do this again.
We should have kept going.
No. No, see, this is what happens when I don't have Nick to whip me in the back.